Welcome to the April 2019 edition of the Rehab Cast, where we're going to be talking with Dr. Ghazala Saleem. Dr. Saleem is postdoctoral research fellow in the Brain Injury Research Center at Johns Hopkins Kennedy Krieger Institute. Dr. Saleem and her colleagues have published Transcranial Direct Current Stimulation in Pediatric Motor Disorders, a systematic review and meta-analysis. We're going to dive into the growing evidence base for the pediatric motor TDCS with Dr. Saleem shortly. There was an electric feeling throughout much of April's mega medical headlines. Among them, the FDA's first non-drug treatment for ADHD, an external trigeminal nerve stimulator made by NeuroSigma, a UCLA-based double-blind sham-controlled trial involving 62 adolescents was published in the journal Psychiatry. It demonstrated statistically significant gains in both the ADHD rating scale and the clinical global impression scale. Now, despite the device's apparent efficacy, it's not known exactly how the nerve stimulation relieves ADHD symptoms. But as reported by MedPage Today, imaging studies have shown that ETNS boosts activity in the brain regions known to be important in regulating attention, emotion, and behavior. The electricity kept flowing throughout the month of April. There was also the unexpected news that DBS, now a commonly available treatment for severe essential tremor, has been implanted in a patient with a moderate traumatic brain injury who recovered good function, but still dealt with the lingering effects of fatigue and memory impairment. Neurosurgeon Jamie Henderson at Stanford implanted the device in a study with collaborators including Nicholas Schiff of Cornell and Joseph Giacino of Harvard. As reported in the New York Times, the woman improved gradually, and by 3 months, she was consistently scoring about 15% better than she had previously on standardized tests of attention, planning, and executive function. She also reported 70% less fatigue on a standard measure and no longer had to take daily afternoon naps like she had before. Previously, brain injury DBS studies have involved a small number of patients with disorders of consciousness with mixed results. Should DBS be proven as a viable option for such symptoms as fatigue and mild cognitive impairment, a vast new market could open up for DBS with major implications for the healthcare system. And finally, in our news roundup, the month of April also brought major news for the field of brain-computer interfaces, as a team at UCSF reported progress in a kind of lip-reading speech synthesizer that's not reading lips, but the cortical EEG patterns associated with the motor production of speech. Using electrocorticography in patients who were preparing for surgical epilepsy treatment and having these patients read hundreds of sentences aloud, this team was able to design a computer program that could learn from the corticography signals the words. Here's a human voice followed by the computer-synthesized voice reading only the EEG signal.
The proof that you are seeking is not available in books.
The proof that you are seeking is not available in books.
That's pretty impressive. And now it's time for our featured interview. Joining us now on the Rehab Cast, Dr. Ghazala Saleem. Her study out with her group at Kennedy Krieger is Transcranial Direct Current Stimulation in Pediatric Motor Disorders. It's a systematic review and a meta-analysis. Dr. Saleem, thanks for joining us in the Rehab Cast today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Very good. Now, to start out with, I see you have a doctorate in education. Perhaps we see a little bit less of that in the rehabilitation literature. Tell us about your background and what the significance is for that and your pediatric rehabilitation research.
So yes, you're right. You do not see as many doctorate of education in rehabilitation. However, Teachers College at Columbia University usually grant doctorate of education to movement scientists in motor control and learning. And that's what my primary background is. I'm going to just give you a little bit more detail.
Sure, thanks.
About my background. So I actually graduated from Columbia University as an occupational therapist, and I started working after my graduation. I started working as an occupational therapist in a neurorehabilitation setting, and I worked with patients with stroke and worked with patients with traumatic brain injury. And while working as a clinician, I realized that while most of the occupational therapy interventions, though robust in bringing about the quality of change in the life of many people, do not have that rigor of evidence-based support and lack that evidence-based support. And this realization motivated me to pursue a career in research. And I joined the, and since most of my interventions were motor learning based that I was using as a clinician, I became interested in the motor control movement sciences programs and decided to go back to Columbia for my doctorate in motor control and learning. And as I mentioned that Columbia, I don't know why, because usually is very science driven profession, movement sciences, and you would expect to see maybe a PhD or SCD in movement sciences, but I think this is the tradition just because Teachers College is known for as a college for education, and this is their I think tradition to award doctorate of education to movement scientists. Anyhow, I graduated with this research doctorate. What led up to doing my transcranial direct current stimulation study is that while I was working in the motor control learning lab, I saw transcranial magnetic stimulation being administered to children with cerebral palsy. And I developed this interest in neuromodulation. And that sort of led to, my postdoctoral fellowship and then this study that got published in the archives.
Excellent. And as you relate, there's certainly been more work in the adult population, more of this literature. I suppose this is kind of typical for pediatric versus adult research, regardless of the condition, that it's there's going to be, perhaps some things start out in children, certainly, but with general techniques like this, certainly true in the rehab literature, often there's a smaller literature. And this is the first, as I understand it, systematic review of the motor control literature related to TDCS in the pediatric population. Is that right?
That is correct. And you are absolutely right that you see a lot of neuromodulation studies in adults. And we have seen a lot of positive studies with adult motor disorders, specifically stroke. And we have seen that TDCS enhances motor control functioning in adults, but you do not see as many studies in the pediatric literature. And what motivated me to do this review is that I was actually looking for transcranial direct current stimulation systematic review and meta-analysis in something that I could find that would tell me that what is how beneficial TDCS is in this population. And I couldn't come across any systematic review or meta-analysis. And that motivated me to do this meta-analysis to see that how beneficial, how significant TDCS is in children with pediatric motor disorders and whether it is safe in children with motor disorders. So yeah, that is right.
As far as the mechanics of a meta-analysis, is that something you had done before?
No, I have not. This is really interesting. When I started looking for TDCS literature in children, I came across some narrative reviews, but they were not as rigorous as a meta-analysis. And I just joined my postdoc. I asked my mentor if I could do a meta-analysis, and she was very pleased with it. And I said that I will be learning a new technique. So you know, it was a lofty task, but I'm fortunate that we have quite a few resources at Johns Hopkins and Kennedy Krieger that I could take advantage at that time. I could take advantage of, and I you know, I learned these new techniques and collaborated with some librarians here who. You know, helped me become familiar with the software review manager. That's by Cochrane, and it was you know, once I learned the technique, it became very relatively easy to put together a meta-analysis.
Yeah, I was interested to read in your methods here that there was kind of meta-analysis software to kind of help people, you know, keep track of all this nowadays, and that's good.
Sure. Sure, sure. It came in very handy. It's it's more efficient. I'm very familiar with statistics programs like Stata and SPSS, and some usually, you know, Stata is used to perform do these forest plots. But I could say this from experience now that Review Manager is very, very effective tool. It's very simple to use, and you know, the output of the pictures and the quality is great. So yeah, highly recommended.
Very good. So talking about pediatric movement disorders, motor disorders, certainly a bulk of that population is going to be CP, and that was reflected in your study, at least all those TDS studies that you could find. You're looking at a variety of different types of diagnoses, certainly just other causes of muscle tone and posture issues and so forth. Were you surprised, though, that it was mostly CP literature? And am I characterizing that correctly? Exactly how much was it?
Yes, you are. I was not surprised. Coming into the review, I sort of knew that there's a lot of published literature on cerebral palsy versus some other disorders, and specifically when you start looking for neuromodulation, the studies become fewer and fewer. So it's you know, I was anticipating that. What I was looking more for, if I could find studies that are sort of standardized across on their motor outcomes, and you know, if I could find data points that are same in two or more studies, so and motor outcomes that I could find you know, similar motor outcomes in two or more studies, because that's really what you need to conduct a meta-analysis. So I, you know, and that's one of the things I have noted for future considerations in the systematic review and meta-analysis for studies to provide data points and means and standard deviations, and also studies to use functional and motor outcomes you know, when they are conducting their studies and use NIH common data elements. So yes, so in response to your question, no, I was not surprised.
Mm-hmm. And you sought information from all sources, including something called the gray literature. What is the gray literature?
thank you for asking that question. It's the conference proceedings abstracts that are not in their true manner peer-reviewed. So, you know, we wanted to include this because it's mentioned in, you know, as I have noted in my systematic review, it's, you know, one of the Cochrane handbook mentioned it to include it to reduce publication bias and to include data that is from other sources other than peer-reviewed studies. So it's, I believe it's important to include data from other sources besides peer-reviewed studies, just for the reason that I mentioned, is to reduce publication bias and to see that if we could include data that may not be pointing to positive effects of TDCS or you know, that could provide us a more broader, a broader view of TDCS response on motor outcomes. So that's why we included it, and that is what gray literature is essentially those studies. As you have, you know, as you must have seen, we have also included a letter to the editor. And that is obviously, you know, it's not considered peer-reviewed, or abstracts are not considered peer-reviewed. So, but we, you know, we have noted it as one of our, you know, limitations as well, that, you know, when you are interpreting results from these data, you should, you know, it warrants caution, because obviously it's not peer-reviewed, but at the same time, you know, it's important, I believe, to include these data.
And one of your chief findings, right at the top of the bat, appears to be the general safety of use of TDCS in this population. And in fact, there were very few dropouts across all the studies, and very few adverse events reported. Can you discuss that with us?
That is correct. And TDCS has been documented as one of the, you know, a safe neuromodulation technique across both adults and children. And that is what we expected as well, and that is consistent with existing literature. Adult studies have shown that TDCS is very safe in other forms of brain injury, for example, stroke. Pediatric literature has shown a safety. The narrative reviews that I have studied, it has shown its safety in neuropsychiatric disorders in children. And going into this systematic review, that's what we anticipated, that we would not find a lot of adverse effects of TDCS, and that's what we found.
Is it correct to state that in none of those, none of the kind of randomized trials or, you know, properly published trials that were done, were any seizures reported, but there was just one in that gray literature of a child who had recently stopped a seizure drug and started another drug that could have lowered threshold and things like that?
Yes, that is correct. So theoretically, you know, it's a form of non-invasive brain stimulation, and the risk exists of having a seizure with TDCS. But so far in literature, seizures have not been reported with the use of TDCS. And this is just one letter to the editor that has reported. And there are several confounding factors, as we have noted, in this child. So to actually state that TDCS resulted in a seizure in this child, because, you know, the child was taking, as you have pointed out, the child was taking medications that was that one of the medication was stopped, and also you know, one of the side effects of one of the medication that the child was taking at that time was to induce seizures. So you know, to say that TDCS is a safe technique in children, you know, as our meta-analysis has indicated, it's consistent with literature. And just to elaborate a little bit more, right now, you know, I have designed a clinical trial that I am that is going to look at the safety, tolerability, and feasibility of TDCS in children with disorders of consciousness using electroencephalography or EEG biomarkers. And this will be the first time that TDCS is going to be used in children. We have an approved IRB for this study, and we are currently in the recruiting phase. And I'm really excited about this clinical trial, because I think that, you know, we will be able to directly reach those targeted areas that are injured in this population with the use of TDCS. So, you know, this meta-analysis has really given us the strength to do this trial, the findings of this meta-analysis, and we will be using TDCS in this medically vulnerable population. So yeah, we are excited.
Yeah, I'm sure the experience of closely scrutinizing so much prior work is helping you design a better trial yourself, and comparing and contrasting different techniques and so forth.
That is correct. That is correct.
Have you decided on a particular montage for that work and the parameters and everything? Or are you going to try a couple of different ones? Or What do you
think? Yeah. So I'm actually going to use the anodal montage, TDCS montage. With this trial, I'm specifically looking at to target dorsolateral prefrontal cortex to induce basic responsiveness in children. But our plan is to expand this trial in moderate and severe brain injury, in children with moderate and severe brain injury, and to target actually primary motor cortex as well with transcranial direct current stimulation in this moderate and severe brain injury pediatric population. So we will eventually end up using a few different montages, but the plan is to use anodal, which is the right protocol in this context.
Okay, very good. Now, back to this study, much of the work was on gait dynamics, rather than upper body, but there were some promising results for that as well. In terms of gait, there were some aspects improved and not others. What was your take on that? And do you have thoughts as to why the TDCS is showing more effect on some of the gait parameters, but not others?
Yes, so as we have noted that TDCS improved velocity, cadence, stride length, and I believe that step length and step width didn't improve. And as we have noted in our discussion, that the reason was that velocity primarily improved, and that had its effect secondarily on cadence and stride length. Our thoughts were that DDCS was able to improve velocity, which is which is consistent with prior literature as well, TDCS we did not see any positive effects on step length and step width. Like I mentioned, that velocity was the primary factor that got improved, and it had its effect on cadence and stride length.
Mm-hmm. There were some positive studies for upper limb spasticity as well.
Correct.
One of the things I thought was quite interesting was some of the concepts that, some of the vagaries of or the techniques of TDCS might be a little bit different for the pediatric population. Perhaps even a pediatric dosing of TDS may be more appropriate. What would you say are the chief differences that are being noted in the parameters of TDCS and how it should be done in this population?
Yes. So, thank you for asking this question. And I think it's so important to emphasize that, TDCS is a very easy technique to use, but it could also be misused. And specifically, in children. So we need to be very, very cautious and careful when using TDCS in the pediatric population, because the same current intensity could be stronger and has a wider spread in a child's brain as compared to an adult's brain. And that's I think, a very, very significant difference. And I believe that, our TDCS trial that I've just mentioned in children with acquired brain injury, we are doing it as a dose escalation trial because we believe that it's so important to know that what's the optimal dosage and what's the safe dosage in children. Because TDCS parameters can differ from adults to children.
And in general, the dose might need to be a bit lower.
Correct. But, it goes back to that point that TDCS, it has shown safety up to 4 milliamperes in adults. And one thing I should also note here, the TDCS effects, they are not always linear. So it doesn't mean that if you apply 2 milliampere, it's going to give you a better outcome or a better response. So it's you know, the and then again, you know, maybe staying within the, say, if you want to stay with a lower dosage, it may not be effective. So considering, you know, all of those factors and what your population is, you know, what the safety of, you know, as we have noted in our meta-analysis, 1 to 2 milliampere of TDCS has been shown to be safe in children, and it has also been shown to be effective, specifically with regards to gait variables. So it's, you know, it's important to be very mindful when using TDCS in children and the dosages.
Going back to the mechanics of conducting a meta-analysis, I saw that you, in your trial, reached out to people when you didn't have the data necessary to do the proper comparisons, and something seemed to have been left out of even a randomized controlled trial. Did you have to do that a lot?
Yes, it's again going back to what I have mentioned earlier. We didn't have to, luckily, we didn't have to do that a lot, and the scientists were very responsive. And they, you know, we corresponded with them, and they provided, some of the scientists provided their data for us. But again, you know, those data points, those data elements, means and standard deviation are so important to include in this study, because that would, you know, that would get researchers to do meta-analysis effectively and efficiently. So, yeah, luckily we did not have to do a whole lot of that, and we got lucky, we got fortunate that scientists responded to us and provided their data. But it's crucial to have those elements in the study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was fascinating some of the details of the things that were left out. You mentioned here that neurostimulant medications, that was only reported in one study out of everything that you looked at. That's kind of wild.
Yes, and neurostimulant medications can be a big confounder with neuromodulation, neuromodulatory interventions. And yes, I was surprised as well that it was left out. And I should, you know, it's, I should note that, you know, including that what medications participants were taking at the time of the study that was conducted is very, very important, specifically in regards to neuromodulatory intervention, because those can be big confounders, and we do not know that what true results are. Yes.
Well, fantastic. Well, I know there's much more we could discuss regarding this study, but I think that's a good overview and taster and teaser for people. They can certainly go turn to the pages of the archives to get more in depth. I'm glad that it was motivating for you to start this innovative research on DOC, TDCS, and the pediatric population. I look forward to seeing the results on that. Well, Dr. Saleem, thank you for joining us in the RehabCast today. It was our pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking about our systematic review in meta-analysis. And I, you know, I would like to thank my team, other researchers, my mentor, Dr. Stacy Siskauer, who was there to provide me support, and I'm grateful for that.
Excellent. That'll do it for this April wrap-up edition of the RehabCast. Join us again next month as we explore the May issue.
Join us in Chicago this fall for ACRM 2019, the largest interdisciplinary rehabilitation conference in the world. The main core conference and pre-conference instructional courses deliver 6 jam-packed days of evidence-based educational content for the whole rehab team, as well as patients and their caregivers. Please visit acrm.org for more information and follow hashtag ACRM 2019.